Education Committee. Welcome to you all. We have some students. Where are you from? Island Park? In Beaverton. I know where that is. Yeah, well, welcome. Who's the teacher? Oh, there you are. Yeah. Well, welcome. Well, we have before us for public hearing Senate Bill 725, Mike Lindbergh, please.
Oh, you have copies of my testimony.
Okay. Mike, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Senator. Oh, Senator Benson, nice to see you.
Nice to see you, Michael.
Senator Hartung and members of the committee, my name is Mike Lindbergh, and I'm chair of the Oregon Arts Commission, and for 17 years I served on the Portland City Council and had primary responsibility for areas having to do with arts and culture. And during that time, I also had a tremendous interest in kids and education, and because of that, I've been working in the last 6 months with Ben Canada, our new superintendent of Portland Public Schools, on arts and education issues, and how you can have arts groups and the schools work together. I'm here today to voice my support and the support of all the Oregon Arts Commissioners for Senate Bill 725. Meeting the higher standards prescribed in the Oregon Education Reform Act will be a major challenge, as we know, for the whole state and for students. This bill proposes to designate Oregon's cultural institutions as informal centers of learning and to create a grant program within the Department of Education to allow schools and districts to tap community cultural resources. Our cultural institutions, and I think this is really the key point I would make today, is how we can use these existing resources. They range from OMSI to the Oregon Symphony to the High Desert Museum to Mission Mill here in Salem, and they are rich in resources. Their collections span a variety of fields, science and technology, the fine arts, history and heritage. Their trained staffs have expertise in many areas ranging from archaeology, contemporary music, literature, and all the history of our state. And these assets, in terms of both the materials, if we look at these hundreds of cultural institutions around the state, the materials and the staffing that they have that could be brought to bear to work in a collaborative effort with our educational institutions offer a tremendous opportunity. Senate Bill 725 proposes to use these assets then to enrich our educational community and work towards increased student performance. It is important to note that a new fund would be established within the Department of Education to allow schools and districts to formalize the use of these resources. Virtually all of Oregon's cultural institutions offer educational programs now, but what this bill proposes to do is to formalize these relationships. And I would say, frankly, having worked both with the schools and been an elected official and having recently worked for the Oregon Symphony, there's really kind of a lack of resources to bring these two together. You may have, for example, the opportunity to have a lot of kids go to the Oregon Symphony, but not the schools might not have the transportation money to get the kids there for the performances or to bring musicians into the school. In this proposal, the new grant funds could be used to work towards improved student performance in these specific ways. Artists, architects, and writers could be in residence in classrooms, could be used for training and professional development for teachers. We could have live in-school or on-site performances on the part of these cultural institutions. It could be used for the development of curriculum and also for teacher workshops and in-service days. In conclusion, I'd say that Senate Bill 725 presents a wonderful opportunity for Oregon students. As they work toward achievement of these higher standards in social studies, language arts, the study of other cultures and arts and music, they should be able to access the resources of all these cultural institutions that we have. Sometimes people take for granted and aren't aware of just this wide array of institutions we have throughout the entire state of Oregon. And I think that this bill is so exciting because what it does is really leverages existing resources and makes it really, we bring to bear current resources to help these students meet these new standards. So with that, I would close my testimony by saying that I really wanted to thank the committee for hearing our testimony, for setting aside 30 minutes for this bill today, and thank Senator Hartung for taking leadership and bringing it forward, and personally say that knowing the challenges that you have financially, that we still all need to dream of the Oregon we want to have. And as a resident of 58 years and coming from Astoria, I know I always think that we ought to shoot for the highest goals that we can have to help our students and our arts and cultural institutions at the same time. So thank you very much, Senator.
Well, thank you, Mike, and thank you for all the work you did as a Portland City Commissioner, and in addition to that, your great work for the arts. I'm so proud of what I see going on in the arts in this city when you look at other cities bigger than Portland. You're doing a good job, and you're doing a big part of it.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask Mike a question. Mike, there's a lot of discussion always about basic education, and we ought to fund the basics and so forth, and it's very important to keep the basics in Portland. Where do you place art in that realm?
Well, first of all, in the Education Reform Act, of course, arts were put in really as one of the areas would be considered the basics. And secondly, I would not want to go into long testimony, but obviously, in fact, I had the same question from the governor one time. You know, is this a question sometime between arts and education? Well, it really isn't one or the other. What we have now is demonstrated proof that by using the arts in our educational as a basic part of the educational offerings, it keeps kids in school, helps them perform better in other subjects, in terms of focus and discipline and logic, and so the evidence there now statistically is in terms of higher SAT scores, more likely to go on to college, staying out of trouble, those types of things. So I think it's not only, you know, sort of good for the soul and inspirational, but it really statistically now has proven that it helps them in these other areas of study.
Well, Mr. Chair, then what you're saying, it is basic.
I do believe that.
Thank you. I agree. Okay. I just wanted to hear it come.
Yeah. I understood. You realize he's a former student.
He knows.
I know who he was, too, right?
You know, except he's kind of leading the question.
Right, right.
Senator Gingrich.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And it's great to see a friend, Mike Lindberg. Wonderful to have you here this afternoon, and I certainly support the measure before us. I do have a question for you. In looking at your written testimony, there's a statement that starts on the in the last paragraph about placing artists, humanists, writers, and historians in residence or classrooms. And we've had quite a bit of discussion in this building and including today on the Senate floor about the place of teacher certification, licensing, those kinds of issues. And how do you see licensing and certification entering into this particular picture, the artists, the humanists, the writers, the historians, et cetera, that you're talking about here? Are these folks who would have to have some kind of credential in order to come into the classroom, or are they coming with some particular skill and expertise, and that's enough to in order to have an impact on the student learning?
Right, that's Senator Gordy, that's an excellent question. In fact, it's such a good question, I'm going to have somebody answer it that knows what the correct answer is. And what we have is a list of several people who are each going to speak for 2 or 3 minutes, and we have people from the educational community and that can address that specific question. So if it's okay, rather than give a very general answer to it, I'd rather have the people who work in the educational community.
Thanks, and again, it's great to see you.
Great to see you.
Fine, and members, if you don't mind, we do have a long
time to
testify, and we've got a half hour late start, so
let's see, it says there are people listed we'd like to call up in groups, and I can't tell from your bracketing, so I'll call next on the list, Bonnie Heitze, and please bring up whoever else is supposed to be with you, or would like to be with you. Hello? welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
I'm Bonnie Heitch, and I'm going to turn this over to Chris Darcy, who wants to speak first.
Okay.
And I'll follow up if that's okay with you.
Oregon Arts Commission, welcome.
Thank you, Senator Hartung. Members of the committee, my name is Chris Darcy. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Arts Commission, and I join our chairman, Mike Lindbergh, in the Arts Commission's support of Senate Bill 725. The Arts Commission and its cultural partners, the Council on the Humanities, the Oregon Heritage Commission, the State Historic Preservation Office, and the Oregon Historical Society, have come together over the past year to work with a task force on cultural development. Our goal has been to develop a comprehensive cultural plan for Oregon, to develop benchmarks for assessing our progress, and to look at ways that we can create incentives for increased public and private support for cultural activities. Linking Oregon's cultural institutions with the state's education reform efforts is a high priority for us. Each of our agencies and cultural partners have education plans, and there are many highly successful programs underway. You'll hear about some of them this afternoon. What Senate Bill 725 proposes is a more formal relationship between schools and districts and our cultural institutions across the state, and using the cultural community as a learning resource. There's opportunity here to leverage some cultural assets to improve student performance. And with the variety of cultural institutions across the state, we in the cultural community can play a role in educational improvements in the social science, arts, and music areas. This bill has two key elements: to designate cultural institutions as centers of learning and as community educational resources, and to create a grant fund within the Department of Education that could be used to place artists, historians, and scholars in residence and classrooms. It could also support professional development for teachers. It could support teachers working with cultural institutions on their educational programs. And it could support live performances, either in schools or in performance facilities throughout the state. You've already started asking, how might this work? This bill proposes that the Department of Education adopt rules for a grant program that can be accessed by schools and districts to fund collaborations with community cultural institutions. That will ensure that schools will develop programs that relate directly to their school improvement goals. New programs might be developed, or the program could support the expansion of existing services. One of them is the Oregon Council for the Humanities Chautauqua in the Schools program. Right now, it works with 15 high schools by enabling scholars and college teachers to work with local teachers to improve and broaden their student opportunities for learning. It could be a collaboration between the Portland Public Schools and Literary Arts, Inc. on the expansion of their program of writers in residence, who might work with 8th grade students on the English benchmark to examine a variety of literary selections and distinguish among the characteristics of a variety of literary forms from a variety of cultures and time periods. So then you begin to introduce history. It might be a wider effort to use the fabulous photographic collection of the Oregon Historical Society as the cornerstone of an Oregon history study unit. With technology today, this could even happen online and be accessed by kids all over the state through distance learning. The possibilities are wide when you consider the range of cultural institutions and resources across Oregon. The Doris Bounds collection of Native American material at the High Desert Museum in Bend. The scientists and science educators on the staff at OMSI in Portland. The development of music curriculum that relates to the pieces performed by the Oregon Symphony as it's touring across the state. Using the rich collections of the Portland Art Museum, the University of Oregon Museum, and the regional historic collections in Southern Oregon, Roseburg, and Portland as the basis for arts and history curriculum development. With the loss of art specialists, especially across the state, schools will need the resources of our museums to enable children to meet the art standards. These standards now call for fifth graders to be able to, quote, identify distinguishing features of works of art and their historical and cultural context. That's probably a lot easier for our kids to understand when they can experience a real work of art rather than a picture in a book. Oregon's Educational Reform Act calls for dramatically improved student performance. There are higher expectations for everybody, for the students, for their teachers, for our community's involvement in learning. This bill links our cultural institutions, their collections, their facilities, and their trained curators and staff with the schools. It creates a fund to support the collaborative development of educational materials to support increased performance. It's a real opportunity to link our schools with existing strong community assets. The Oregon Arts Commission strongly supports the bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll hold questions until we hear from you.
Thank you. Senator Hartung, members of the committee, my name is Bonnie Heitz, and I have the privilege of serving on the Salem-Keizer School Board. I, too, am here to support Senate Bill 725. The Salem-Keizer School District is committed to ensuring that all children succeed and to make sure that all of our students meet the new state benchmarks. Senate Bill 725 proposes to use Oregon's cultural resources to help us help our students achieve those benchmarks. Most districts, or at least the Salem-Keizer School District, doesn't have the funding or the available staff right now to devote to new programs or the development of new curriculum. One of the strengths of this bill is that it creates a mechanism for schools to partner with our cultural institutions on the use of their resources for student improvement and to provide in-servicing and training for our teachers. Here in Salem, that could mean that the Marion County Historic Society could partner with the school district on the development of a curriculum related to history in Salem, which is part of our third grade study area, or that the curriculum staff could use the collections at Mission Mill Museum, not only for the basis of history and economic development coursework, but for the development of a study on the arts and textile design. I am particularly supportive of the ways that this bill can assist students with the Certificate of Advanced Mastery, which includes not only academic achievement, but career-related learning standards. High school students will choose an endorsement area or broad career area of interest to focus their studies on. It's planned that a blend of school, work, and community-based experiences will be needed for students to meet the CAM standards. In the Salem-Keizer School District, we have convened a committee of school district staff and leaders of our arts and communications communities to begin to lay the foundation for the development of an arts CAM in our community. We are looking for opportunities to partner with the arts industry to provide enhanced learning, contextual learning opportunities for our students that may occur both inside and outside of our classroom setting. It's a new way of looking at providing education to our students, and it's very, very exciting. And what's even more exciting are some of the ideas that are coming forward. But we have not been able to implement a number of these ideas. And our major impediment right now is that we have not been able to dedicate the staff time from either the arts community or from the school district to formalize the relationships that are necessary so that we can coordinate between the schools and the arts community. We need to create the necessary planning time to develop the curriculum and those opportunities that are out there for our students. The education of Oregon's children is a priority to all of us. Senate Bill 725 presents some practical ways to begin to better link our cultural institutions with our schools. It's a very good first step towards leveraging the assets of our museums, our historic societies, and our art groups for increased student performance and educational services and programs across the state. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for being a member of the Salem-Keizer School Board. I know that takes a bit of time. Questions or comments from the members? Thank you very much.
Let's see. I still can't tell. But I'd like three people to come up, and how about Margaret Deckert, Sharon Morgan, and Whitney Moore. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Senator Hartung and committee, for allowing me the opportunity to come today and speak in support of Senate Bill 725. My name is Margaret Decker. I am the curriculum director for Albany School District. And my purpose in being here today is to share with you some of the things that we in education could provide for our kids all over the state. Even though I'm here from one district, I feel a need to show support for kids all over the state. That with the funds from this bill, things that we haven't been able to do for a long time on a regular basis, especially in the outlying parts of our state. Things that we want for all our kids, not just the ones who live in and around the city. We'd be able to take our kids out of the district for field trips to places like the Portland Art Museum, the High Desert Museum, the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, the Hope Center, the Washington Park Zoo, OMSI. It would be this way. Our students wouldn't have to live in Portland and Eugene to be exposed to a variety of these cultural events and activities. These funds would allow districts to go beyond the narrow confines of some, in some cases, one-day field trips, which at this point is always not possible either. We'd be able to provide artists in residence like Kim Stafford for literature, Nancy Middleman Merkins for theater and dance, Michael Gibbons for painting and art, and bring in other of our rich resources from our American Native residents. We'd be able to bring in master educators like Annie Painter to help us develop comprehensive programs around the arts that include science, math, and history, and to provide extended youth and teacher institutes. We'd be able to develop ongoing partnerships with museums and art associations, theater groups with schools and classes, so that students can really be involved in these activities and not just watch others perform. We'd be able to purchase art replications like prints of paintings and models of statues and displays from art centers that can be used in classrooms with children. We'd be able to purchase teaching materials and time for teachers to develop curriculum guides and other support resources. We'd be able to make available more computers that are online so that students would have immediate access to different art centers and resources around the world and not just in our own immediate area. Art activities do go on in our schools now, but in a much reduced fashion, and the quality isn't always what we'd like it to be because we don't have always real hands-on experiences and resources to offer for all of our students. These funds would allow us in the schools to raise the quality of teaching and learning in Oregon and help us bring our students up to the high standards that have been set because art is a hook for many of our children. And I hope you will consider it carefully and then approve this bill and pass it out to the House. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chairman Hardin and Senators, I'm Karen Morgan. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Alliance for Arts Education. I currently live in McMinnville, but I, after 35 years or more at the Oregon coast in Lincoln County. The Alliance is a statewide organization of educators, artists, arts organizations, and parents, and it is in the voice of the parents that I would like to address my comments. And as a parent myself, I know I'm also speaking for children. I have to speak from the basis of my own experience. When my oldest son started school, I thought it was my job to do everything to have him prepared for school. What I didn't realize is that his learning experience was going to be really affected by the quality of preparation for his classmates. It's an utter important issue to get out, as he told me. Mommy, I don't think my teammate has enough to eat, and he doesn't have any socks. So it made a difference, my giving him a hot breakfast and being sure that he had clean clothes was one thing, but my first work in school was in making sure that there were crates of fresh fruit and bread downstairs for breakfast for all kids and that there was a clothing bank established. It didn't matter that I could take my kids to the Nutcracker or the OMSI. If that was not an experience that was shared by their peers and classmates and friends, it was a diluted experience and a diluted investment on my part. So my second big effort in school in rural Lincoln County was to be sure that those experiences were available for all my kids' friends. This bill has that opportunity to make it equitable access available for all kids across the state. And sharing cultural experiences, whether you live in inner city Portland or in Nyssa or Tillamook, having access to similar kinds of cultural experiences will go far in helping us make that one Oregon that we dream of. So that wherever you grew up, you can talk about having heard Oboe Addy and understanding African music and its relationship to soul and spiritual and moral values as developed by the Ghanaian society. It will help to inspire all kids whether they think that life really happens only west of the mountains, or that the eastern part of the state is somehow really a high desert in many ways, more ways than just being on the other side of the mountain. Because they will understand that what happens on the western side of the mountain is not just small. And I think that exposing kids to culture in terms of what is the highest and the best and the broadest expression is a critical responsibility of all of us. As a member of the Alliance, I'd like to respond to Senator Gordley's question. Because we work with cultural institutions from around the state, this bill is coming at a particularly exciting time because there is a concerted effort around the standards that have been established. So that for the first time, I see cultural organizations, many of whom I've worked with for a long time, really examining and training their artists and developing their curriculum programs as supportive programs for schools. I'm excited about the fact that all parents might have the opportunity to have some of their own cultural experiences remediated through the work with their children. We have a generation of parents who have not had cultural access in an equitable kind of way. And as Senate bill would be enacted and the curriculum would be developed, most of our cultural organizations also realize that you don't just address the child's needs, but you reach out and touch the family also. So we would be remediating and touching not only one student. So as a parent, as a grandparent, and as a long-term investor in arts education, I urge your support and thank you for this time to have expressed with you.
Yes, thank you very much. Would you proceed, please?
Senator Hartung and members of the committee, my name is Whitney Moore. As the Executive Director of Mission Mill Museum, one of the state's historic and cultural resources, I would like to tell you how Mission Mill Museum is currently serving as a center of historical and cultural learning. First, approximately 4,000 students, primarily from elementary and middle schools, visit annually to tour the museum, participate in activity-based classes, and experience firsthand the unique history preserved at the site. These students are from all regions of Oregon. Second, two innovative pilot programs, Mission Mill Players Troupe, a performing arts living history group, and SAGE, Students as Guides for Education, will kick off this summer. Both of these programs will offer general elective credit for high school students. They are the first programs of their kind in Salem and have the full and enthusiastic support of the principals, teachers, and students at both North and South Salem High Schools. Third, we are currently providing invaluable teacher training for student internships in collaboration with Western Oregon University, Willamette University, and the University of Idaho. With adequate funding for future programs, we can continue to serve as a critical resource to the schools by expanding these programs throughout the school year, thereby doubling or even tripling the number of students reached by our programs. Our success with these programs, which has been achieved with very minimal staff support and funding, is evidence that there is a strong need to connect students with existing cultural resources in every community, and that these programs will have the enthusiastic support of educators. With the passage of this bill, cultural organizations such as Mission Mill Museum can continue to create these unique partnerships throughout the state, which will enhance and enrich the education and the lives of our children, while at the same time preserving and linking our cultural heritage to the future. I thank you for the opportunity to express my support of this bill, and I enthusiastically urge you to your support. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Questions, comments, needs? Thank you very much. Now may I have Jose Gonzalez, Riley Grannon, and Vicki Poppin, please. Welcome to the committee. Please proceed.
Okay. My name is Jose Gonzalez, and I'm the executive director for the Miracle Theater Group, which is the largest Hispanic arts and culture organization in the Northwest. Thank you for having me here today. Basically, this bill would assist organizations like ourselves to continue developing and presenting programs in schools. We have a long history of doing this. Over 10 years, our programs reach every corner of the state, and currently, actually just today, I sent off the company to Wyoming, so it gets even further than that. But particularly because we focus primarily or essentially on the Hispanic community in terms of presenting, developing, and designing our programs, we think that this education bill is extremely important. It's essential for students coming from a different cultural background to have a connection to the arts and curriculum that is directly related to where they come from. And that's where we stand. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Senator Hartung, members of the committee, I'm Vicki Poppin, and I'm the Education Director at the Regional Arts and Culture Council in Portland, Oregon. And I think I don't want to be redundant and say and repeat a lot of the things that some of the speakers have said before me, because I think they've all made the case very well. But I do believe that I was brought here because the agency that I'm associated with has had a lot of experience in doing just the kinds of partnerships that Senate Bill 725 is encouraging. And what we have seen is that there have been some very successful model partnerships out there between the education system and the arts community, but they're very few and far between. So, and also that the arts and cultural institutions are very willing and very eager to help the schools, and they want to offer their services. In fact, in the Portland area alone, last year, over $1.1 million worth of services were provided to Portland Public Schools from area arts organizations. However, that was uneven, and as Sharon Morgan had said earlier, there isn't an equity to that. Some schools get and some schools don't. So Senate Bill 725 would bring some equity to that process. In addition, many of those arts organizations that are providing services don't have the central coordination that's making those services as effective a resource to the schools as possible. So part of what Senate Bill 725 has included in there is the coordination of professional development workshops coordinated by the Department of Education for the arts and cultural institutions to bring them up to speed and get them on the same page and base of knowledge as the education system, so they can provide the best possible services to the schools. So I would just like to offer my support.
Thank you very much. John?
Thank you, Chairman Hartung and members of the committee. My name is John Mangan. I'm a Standard Insurance Company in Portland, but today I'm also representing the Business Committee for Arts and Culture, which consists of 150 member companies from around the state of Oregon, and also of the nonprofits which I serve, the Oregon College of Art and Craft, as chairman of the Board of Trustees, and Young Audiences of Oregon. And I just wanted to echo the comments of the previous speakers and compliment you on reviewing this legislation and looking kindly toward it. As a good student, I had a chance to study literature in high school, and I know that the 17th century poet John Donne once said that no man is an island. I think that also extends to our institutions, and you know this all too well, that none of our institutions stand alone. And this bill helps link some of our most important institutions. It links business, which supports government and nonprofits with their outreach and education programs. It links the nonprofits themselves to the public education system, and as you've heard, that's becoming an increasingly important component of children's education around the state. And of course, it gives you a chance to bring all that together. It seems like a really smart thing for us to do. It leverages all those resources together and provides a valuable link among all those organizations. So my conclusion is that we think it's very good for business, it's good for the kids, it's good for government, it's an efficient way to use your resource, and therefore it's a good thing for Oregon. So thank you very much again for the opportunity.
Thank you, John. Questions or comments from the members? Thank you very much. Is Riley Graham in here from the Eugene Ballet? Okay.
Sorry, you didn't
arrive. Okay. Yeah, thank you. We accept it. Has anyone else come to testify on Senate Bill 725? Seeing none, we will close.
public hearing on Senate Bill 725 and open the public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 363. And could I have Greg McMurdo, Steve Johnson, and Susie Harris to the table, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For your record, Greg McMurdo representing the Department of Education, and with me is Steve Johnson, who is the Associate Superintendent for Special Education, and Susie Harris, who is giving you some handouts from the Office of Special Education. Senate Bill 363 is the Department's bill to bring Oregon statutes in conformity with the federal IDEA as reauthorized last year, and the federal regulations, which were just published in March 12th. This bill was pre-session filed, and we waited a long time to get all the amendments to you. This is the second time that I've worked on this type of effort. I think the last time we brought this to you was in the 93 session, after IDEA had been reauthorized in 1991. It's a very thick bill, and what you're getting is some commentary that we hope that you will have time to read, and as importantly, that will become part of the record of this committee so that it shows what the intent of the various sections of the bill are. You also should have a one-page summary that hits some of the highlights of the bill. The purpose of this bill is merely to bring Oregon statutes into conformity with federal statutes and federal regulations. We have worked hard to see that we haven't gone beyond that. I think, Mr. Chairman, at Ways and Means Committee and Senator Gordley, we told you this was a good opportunity to review the substantive side of the special ed laws as opposed to the Ways and Means, the dollars side. And this certainly is a good way to do that. In any event, our intent and the purpose of this bill, again, is merely to bring state law into compliance with federal law. It's a very thick bill, and I'm going to let Steve and Susie take it from here. We are prepared and hope that we can go through this section by section.
Okay. Steve.
Good afternoon, Senator Hartung and members of the committee. I'm Steve Johnson, Associate Superintendent, Oregon Department of Education. As Greg has indicated, Senate Bill 363 is, in fact, a bill to bring Oregon statutes into conformance with the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, IDEA, which was passed and signed into law in June of 1997. Senate Bill 363 reflects the concerns and the input, the issues and ideas of parents, teachers, administrators, and many others throughout the state of Oregon. Over the last 2 years, we have held over 45 public input sessions for parents, teachers, administrators, advocacy organizations, for them to bring their concerns and suggestions to the department to be reflected in this legislation. Most recently, the department formed a constituency team to share with us the task of drafting proposed language. That constituency team was made up of teachers, parents, district administrators, the Education Service District Organization, regional programs, university staff, the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators, the Oregon School Boards Association, advocacy organizations such as the Oregon Advocacy Center, and the State Developmental Disabilities Council, as well as representatives from the State Advisory Council for Special Education and the State Interagency Coordinating Council for our Early Intervention, Early Childhood programs. In addition, we had representation from the Coalition in Oregon for Parent Education. We have been in constant discussion with the U.S. Department of Education. In fact, as late as 4 p.m. yesterday afternoon, we were reviewing some of these items with them. Currently, as we speak, representatives of the U.S. Department of Education are speaking to over 200 teachers, parents, school boards, representatives, attorneys, advocacy organization representatives, and others in Portland to review the regulations. Senate Bill 363 is a conforming legislation. It does not exceed federal requirements. Much of the language is drawn directly from federal law and federal regulation. Senate Bill 363 that you consider today brings us into compliance. It does not exceed federal requirements, and it permits continued public input into how we will provide education to students with disabilities in this state. I'd like to ask Susie Harris now to review the major items in the bill with you.
The hardest for the last. Susie Harris, Senator Hartung, and members of the committee. What I'd like to do is point out some highlights of this bill and go through, maybe not section by section, but give you the highlights, and then if you have questions, we'd be happy to answer those questions. The first section of this bill talks about who's eligible for special education and related services. And under IDEA, under the federal law, Congress limited access to special education and related services in some new ways. And one of the things Congress said is that individuals who were incarcerated in adult correctional facilities, 18 to 21 years old, would only be eligible for special education and related services if they had been identified in the educational facility in which they were in before they were incarcerated. In other words, the adult correctional facility would not be required to provide special education to individuals who had not previously been identified or receiving special education.
Mr. Chair, if I may inquire about that point. How many persons currently incarcerated are affected by this this language?
I think we'd have to get that data to you at a later point. I don't have the numbers right now.
I would be interested in knowing the impact.
Okay. This doesn't mean that those individuals would not have access to whatever educational opportunities are available in those facilities, as would anyone. It's just the additional obligation for special education-related services. Okay. There's another component to this limitation, which was made clear in the regulations that were issued on March 12th, and that is that special education-related services do not have to be provided to individuals who graduate from high school with a regular high school diploma. That's been a kind of unclear provision in state law before this clarification of federal law. So in other words, you have an 18-year-old who fulfills the requirements for graduation and graduates with a regular high school diploma, they would not be entitled to continue receiving special education-related services after their receipt of that regular diploma. If you have a student who graduates with a modified diploma or a certificate of attendance or some other indication that they've not met the requirements for a standard regular diploma, they would continue to be eligible for special education-related services until the end of the school year in which they turn 21. We believe this affects a small number of students, that today students who graduate with a regular diploma do not often seek special education-related services when they leave high school.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator.
And the belief is based on what information or documentation?
We have some data on the total number of students 18 to 21 receiving special education-related services in this state by disability category,
mm-hmm.
and most, which is a rough figure for what we're trying to get at, but the majority of those students are identified with having more severe cognitive disabilities that would not, likely not allow them to receive a regular high school diploma. It is possible we could also provide that data to you.
So I would like to see that information as well. Thank you.
Okay. Moving on to Section 2, this provision would help school districts serve those individuals in local or regional correctional facilities who are entitled to special education-related services by it puts in a notice requirement that the correctional facility notify the school district when they have school-age individuals who are incarcerated in those facilities, and that notice would need to be provided within 5 business days. This does not change the obligation to serve kids. Local school districts are currently obligated to serve these individuals. It just facilitates that. It makes it easier for school districts and for kids to get together when they're in these facilities. I'm going to skip ahead to Section 6 because it's another general provision. Section 6 clarifies the responsibility of other public agencies to provide services that would otherwise be required even when those services are also required for special education. In other words, you may have an agency such as OMAP that's responsible for providing certain medical services to children with disabilities. Even if those services could be considered special education-related services, what this provision says is those agencies that are otherwise responsible are still responsible even if they could also be considered special education-related services. This is a provision from federal law that we're implementing in the state.
Okay. Can we go back to Section 4, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, now we'll talk about Section 4, discipline.
All right.
Okay. Section 4. In federal law, in IDEA 97, which took Congress several sessions to complete, discipline was a big stumbling block in getting their legislation through. And what they tried to do was balance the rights of the students to get an education with the need to have safety in schools. We all understand that both of those are important. We want kids to get education. We want our children to be safe in schools. So you will see in this legislation, we took exactly the same, we crafted the same balance that the federal law crafted and implemented this at the state level. The basic premise is that for up to 10 days of removal for disciplinary reasons, those first 10 days are not considered a denial of a free appropriate public education. The school district's not required to provide services to students for those first 10 days. It allows the district to have an immediate response to an unsafe situation, potentially a cooling down period, and an opportunity to plan for how they're going to address the child's educational needs potentially in some other setting. We've implemented that in this bill, in Section 4. Secondly, the bill says that if it's going to be more than 10 days, either more than 10 days in a row, let's say 12 days, 30 days, the rest of the year, an expulsion, or if it's a repeated 10-day increment of discipline, that services must be provided. Okay? If a child with a disability is going to be removed for more than 10 days in a school year, the district has to provide services. It doesn't have to be provided necessarily in that same setting where the problem occurred, but the child does continue to have to receive services. This is complicated. I understand that. We spent about 3 hours on this issue in our training going through the regulations, so I don't expect you to be able to explain all the nuances, but I do want to give you the big picture. One is services after 10 days. Another piece is that if a child's going to be removed for more than 10 days, or if it's a pattern of removals of more than 10 days, they can only be removed for misconduct they cannot be removed for misconduct that's a manifestation of their disability. There are exceptions for weapons and drugs-related offenses. And those exceptions are that the school district can always remove a child for up to 45 days for weapons and drug-related offenses, and they can do that through school personnel removing the child. There's also a provision for children who are dangerous or who are substantially likely to injure themselves or others at school, and a school district may seek a hearing officer order to remove those children if they need to ensure a safe school environment. One thing that you don't see in here is a provision from the federal law that clarifies school districts are not prevented from reporting conduct that would be considered a crime to appropriate authorities if that occurs at school. The reason you don't see that in here is we believe that reporting provision is consistent with current state and federal law, with current state law and regulation, and would not require any amendment to implement that reporting provision, and I believe that school districts are aware of that provision and act on it when it's appropriate. Any questions about that piece, or keep going? Okay. There are a variety of provisions in this bill which try to make consistent the amount of detail that we have in the bill between early childhood special ed and school age services. I'd call these kind of housekeeping changes. For the most part, we've added in pieces where we need to, like a definition of an individual education program, which wasn't in the law before, but which needs to be there because it's a basic foundational piece of special education that every child with a disability is entitled to an IEP that identifies what services they're allowed to get in school or what services they will be receiving. We took out some detail where we believed it was unnecessary to have that in the statute or where we needed more more discussion and debate through the rulemaking process about what should be in there. So there's some detail that's taken out. We've added a definition of mediation. Again, that's because there's an emphasis in the federal law on using mediation as a means of resolving disputes between school districts and parents. So we've added a definition of mediation. And another just housekeeping detail is that the early childhood special ed statutes included a 10-day notice requirement, which was not required under federal law or regulation, so we took out that 10-day requirement and made it reasonable notice. Okay. Another basic piece that we've incorporated in this law is transfer of rights at age 18. What the federal law said is that students at the age of majority in the state, which is when Oregon would be 18, that students would have the right to act as the parent in making educational decisions. So that piece is in here. We've also implemented various procedural safeguards in the statute that weren't in there before, including some attorney fee provisions that would limit fees under certain circumstances. And I would characterize the rest of the changes as housekeeping changes. I've lost my audience.
Yeah, you did a great job. Any questions, Senator?
No.
Okay, do you have any further comments? Okay, thank you very much. And Jim Green, would you like to testify? You're back. We're on a tight schedule. We've got to be out of here 3:05, so... Short and
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jim Green representing the Oregon School Boards Association. I wasn't in when Ms. Harris began her testimony, but the Oregon School Boards Association was a member of a work group that was put together at the Department of Ed to try to mesh state law with the new federal law changes. If you ever want to have some good bedtime reading, read the new federal regs that are out on special ed. They're about that thick on front and back pages. And what they've tried to do is mesh this bill into that. I understand there are some groups, though, in the building that have some concerns with Senate Bill 363, the Oregon Youth Authority, the Juvenile Rights Project, the ARC of Oregon, the Oregon Advocacy Center have some concerns and want to sit down and talk about it. What I would urge the committee to do, and I know you have to move on this bill by next Wednesday, but get a group of folks together within the next couple of days to come together with what their problems may be or suggested amendments and hopefully get that group together to within the next, by the end of the week, to talk about the issues found within this bill. And I would certainly be willing to sit on that group and discuss those issues. But this is a major rewrite of our special education statutes, and I think if we can bring everybody together in the next couple of days, that would probably be the process to go through.
Good. I'd like that. And you are appointed head of that group. Kathy, and that works okay with you to work with Jim and others?
And we would, of course, the Department of Ed would be there,
yeah, sure.
And everybody at the table.
Yeah, thank you very much. And you would keep up with Jim, so we'll make sure we don't miss. Oh, just to miss the deadline.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, yes, I will.
Okay, fine. Anyone else wish to testify on Senate Bill 363? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing and work session. And here's my view. And open the public hearing on Senate Bill 998. Bruce Herbert, please.
welcome to the committee and proceed. You told me that, or you heard me say that we have to be out of here. And so everything you say will be on the record and will be accessible to all the members too. Welcome to the committee and proceed.
Thank you. Yeah, my name is Bruce Herbert and I live in Florence. And I am the person who has worked with a number of senators and representatives and is proposing the Oregon Center for Business and Economic Education that's embodied in Senate Bill 998. This last weekend there was an article in Parade magazine that appeared that told people something that many of us already knew, and that is that business and economic education in Oregon is not doing, or at least nationally, is not doing especially well right now. And Oregon is certainly, you know, in that position. As some of you know, if you read the article, 49% of adults and 66% of students fail what is a very, very simple economics test. And in the booklets that I passed out to you, the article and the test itself are both included at the back. I went onto the website and grabbed the test questions and reformatted them. You see, it's a fairly easy test. Only 6% of adults and 3% of students got 18 or more out of 20, which corresponds to an A grade. Now, that's not a good situation. In Oregon, our situation with regard to business and economic education is quickly deteriorating. The elimination of the personal finance and economics graduation requirement has caused a number of position losses and a number of programs to close down, and as people are retiring and leaving, more of that is happening. You know, it leaves us with a couple of courses of action. Either at some point we will reinstate that requirement, in which case we'll have to do a great deal of training because many qualified and eligible people have already left, and more will have left by the time we get around to it. If we don't reinstate it, and we probably won't at this point, so we're going to have to deal with the environment we have, then we're going to have to train teachers to infuse, is the current term, personal finance and economic topics into core academic classes like math, science, and history. Many of the teachers who are teaching these subjects have very little background in economics and personal finance, and so it's a difficult thing for them to do this. Either way, since we have economics and personal finance benchmarks, you know, we need to do something to better prepare teachers and make it possible for them to better prepare their students in these tests. And I kind of look at this as the educational equivalent of the Highway 26 tunnel situation. We have studies showing that teachers and students often don't know much about the subject, and the people who are qualified to teach it are leaving. They aren't being replaced because we've closed down our business teacher education programs at Oregon public universities. Many of the ones who are coming out, whether we're getting them from other places or coming out of other institutions, aren't coming out with good backgrounds, and we're seeing some problems. I know as a member of Oregon Business and Management Educators, we're working with some of these people, but there are problems there. We're still sort of living off the people who were trained back in the 60s, in the middle 80s, but you know, those people are beginning to leave. So what we've got is sort of a crumbling infrastructure in there. We need to do something to shore it up before we get a real disaster and spend some real money on it. We also are dealing with a situation in the State Department of Education where there's a certain amount of turf battling going on. When the benchmarks and test coverage for the new state tests were determined, only social studies teachers were involved, and that's despite the fact that social studies is only one of the three areas or endorsement areas where teachers are certified to teach. The other two were general business and office and marketing. Okay. Our state standards in that area are very weak. If, one of the things I've also included in the packet there is the National Council on Economic Education standards, and you see there, those are substantial standards. They're very good, and I wish we had standards like that here, but we don't. Our standards are relatively weak, and if you look at ours, which are also in there, and compare the two, you'll see that our standards are rather fuzzy and very
difficult for people to get a handle on. And the good part about that maybe is that they're very easy to meet because we don't know exactly what people have to do. So the question is, how do we improve the situation? And what,
excuse me, Dr. Herbert, we're just about to improve the situation.
Well,
did you say improve?
I will yield part of my time. Well, members, I don't know. Thanks.
Okay. Dr. Herbert, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I apologize for being late. I tried to get down here a little bit earlier when Bruce was going to hear this. So I just want to put my two cents worth in for what's worth. And I think it's something that would be, this proposal is right on target. At a time when we're losing interest in improving our youth in dealing with economics and how to deal with economics, the doctor has brought forth a policy aims that's well worth exploring, and I think it would be beneficial to our part of the state on the coast. He's from Florence, and I think that would be a good opportunity for us to initiate the program. And I'm not sure, Doc, so I'll just let you where you want to put the program at. I think it would be ideal. And I just want to to give your underlying attention to the proposal and perhaps your blessing to it.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Any questions or comments for Senator Arnold?
Yeah.
Thank you.
It just seems like it was just the other day that there was an article in one of the local papers about this very issue and that we do need to do a better job of providing education about economics and in our state. And actually, I meant to cut that out and put it in this file to remind me. So, absolutely. I mean, I do see a need for this program, and I hope we can accomplish this. So, thanks.
Mr. Chairman?
There you go.
Actually, that was part of a remonstrance I dropped on.
Oh, that was...
Oh,
okay.
Senator Castillo promised to listen more carefully.
It has nothing to do with chemicals in the water.
Okay.
Do you have comments? Thank you.
Thank you.
No,
thank you,
Herbert.
I mean, in the packets, I've given you an outline of the program, and as Senator George knows, you know, I have very little tolerance for programs that don't work, and I think he'll be the first person to tell you that based on his past experience and some of our discussions. And that gets down to an accountability piece that, you know, I hope we'll talk about at some point. But I propose something that is going to be very visible. It's going to be very focused, very aggressive. You know, we're going to go out and we're going to work with teachers, and that's something that requires a little bit of money to do, and I think the amount of money is fairly reasonable, and I've also provided within the packet, you'll see a funding mechanism for it. We can entertain some questions about that. We're going to employ some principles of marketing here. We're going to determine what people need. We're going to get out there and develop products and meet those needs. And we're going to maintain constant contact with people all around the state. This is not going to be a regional type program. This is going to be something that's going to benefit all people in Oregon. Now, I kind of look at it as e-commerce, meaning educational commerce in this case. We're going to be very entrepreneurial in terms of what we do, and we're going to be very careful about how we spend the state's money. I feel a great stewardship for many, and I'm very cheap, aside from everything else. So, you know, we're certainly going to make do with the resources we have and make a lot of them. And again, without getting heavily into all things and factors, we certainly don't have all the time in the world to go through that. What we're talking about doing is updating the product, creating a website. You know, we have a grant to do that already if we can get this program through. Doing distance education and making information available to people and interchanging information that way. I think the electronic technology is there to allow us to do many of these things. Creating linkages with other groups. Right now we can leverage some already developed associations with groups such as the Oregon Bankers Association, the Oregon Credit Union League, the Oregon Consumer League, Associated Oregon Industries, NFIB, Oregon Association of Realtors, and major corporate preferences such as Fred Meyer and Walmart. And if you look in your packet, you'll also see a letter of support from Ken Thrasher, the Chief Administrative Officer and Executive Vice President of Fred Meyer, who's, you know, very much in favor of seeing this happen.
If I might interrupt you, Dr. Herbert, in order to keep a time schedule, we have to be out here. I'd like to, you can remain if you'd like, and call on Dr. Tom Patowski. That's the correct place. Yeah.
Anyone else that's signed up to testify on Senate Bill 998?
Mr. Chair, I don't see the Department of Education. Are they going to be here to comment?
I don't know. I just am looking at the witness registration sign up. So I guess they are not signing up. So, Tom, welcome.
Good afternoon.
Yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chairman Hartung, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tom Patowski. I'm a professor and chair of the Economics Department at Portland State University, and I'm also a member of the board of directors for the Oregon Council on Economic Education, and it's with that hat that I'm speaking to you today. And I'm speaking to you more in informational terms to let you know something about an organization that presently exists that does many of the things that Dr. Herbert has just mentioned and so passionately and correctly, I think, presented the situation. First of all, the Oregon Council on Economic Education is a member of the National Council on Economic Education. And as Dr. Herbert mentioned about the Parade magazine article, it was the National Council on Economic Education that conducted those tests to see about the level of economic literacy in the country. There's 48 affiliated states right now with councils on economic education, one of which is here in Oregon, and there's over 275 affiliated university college-based centers of economic education. We have two such centers in Oregon, one at Portland State University and the other one at Mount Hood Community College. And just very briefly, because I know we're all pressed for time, just to give you a little idea of what the Oregon Council on Economic Education is doing through the National Council, we're trying to be a leader in developing of national and state content standards in economics. We assist in development of national, state, and local standards and standards for curricula, mainly through K through 12. We publish classroom tested materials and strategies for teachers and students. We provide university, college-based courses, workshops, professional development for teachers. And to make sure everything's on track, there is a whole set of well-thought-out evaluations, assessments, research to see if the knowledge is getting through to the students. But one of the main focus is to be a teacher of teachers. And we feel that if we can get the word and to provide the, especially the high school teachers with knowledge, exactly as Dr. Herbert said, the knowledge base is rapidly declining. Now, that asset has depreciated quite a bit across the high schools, and we do need to get back in there and teach those teachers. And I just wanted to just provide you with one example of a project that the Oregon Council on Economic Education just completed in a joint working with the San Francisco Federal Reserve Bank. We put on something called the Economic Challenge. We had over 50 high school students throughout Oregon come to the Portland State University campus, and for half the day they competed with one another in their economic knowledge. The winning team, which was Sunset High School in Beaverton, gets to go and compete against the other western states that are in the Federal Reserve 12th District to San Francisco to become the champions. But it provided a great case for students to meet with one another. They were excited about economics, and the competition was well received. We're also involved in something called the stock market game, which goes throughout the state, which also provides a avenue to bring in economic knowledge and interest into something that's very hot these days, the stock market. And the kids really enjoy playing it, and we get them to really try to tell us why they pick their stocks, and we're able to get the economic knowledge through that way. But there's many programs that we have. There's already teaching materials that are provided. There is a website available. We're hoping also to leverage this new technology with the web to drive the stock market game and its economic challenge further out into the rest of the state. And I will add that it's been a hard road for the Oregon Council on Economic Education. The funding has been quite low. There is no state funding at this time. But we've sort of reorganized ourselves. Donations are up. We have a new executive director, and we're trying to push forward to do exactly the things that Dr. Herbert described.
Well, thank you, Tom. Questions for either gentleman? Senator Duncan.
Mr. Chair, I guess I'm
I'm trying to look, and I've talked to Ms. Hibbert before, and I'm familiar, served on that council for many years. I'm trying to see where it all fits in together. I mean, you're going off and doing a separate thing. Is that right, Mr. Hibbert? I mean, you're...
Well, we're doing some things that aren't being done right. I mean, right now there isn't anybody out there who gets in on a daily basis and is working with K-12 teachers, and I think that's the part of the puzzle, and that's the funding thing. I mean, there isn't money for anybody to do that right now, and it isn't. There's for various reasons it isn't happening.
So, well, I guess we'd be peace meeting it through the economic council through the years, and I'm saying if you had the same money, you'd be able to provide the same kind of services through the university. Is that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Duncan. I think yes. That's true.
I'm seeing a bit of duplication of efforts.
Mm-hmm.
One wanting funding, the other one needing funding. And with all due respect, I'm kind of curious about, I mean, I know from Dr. Hibbert, the center in Florence, because you live in Florence. Is that, you know, that's the reason. I guess I'd love to see it tied to an education institution someplace online. And I'd be also curious, or the Department of Education gets into this whole thing.
Well, what I would like to do, in view of the time limit, is
I appoint you, Doctor. I know you're good one, because I'm...
Yes, you are.
Well, they might not trust me. I've been too involved with this to here.
I trust you. And just if you would get together with the two gentlemen and the department and see if there's some way we can partner or collaborate or extend it. I would appreciate it if you'd report back. Okay. Thank you, Senator Duncan.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Yeah, just several comments. But I'm also wondering why this is not a part of the Oregon University system. And then we just heard testimony this morning in our joint Ways and Means Education Subcommittee from the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission on the standards that we're trying to achieve for teachers who will be doing their work in the 21st century. So is there a conversation that should also be taking place with the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission around improving teachers' knowledge of business and economics, or is that, I'm just trying to understand where the linkages are.
I guess on several levels, well, I think conversations like that probably can and should always take place on a continuing basis. I think the difference is in this case that we're talking about teacher preparation in the first place. This isn't teacher preparation. You know, we're not stepping on the toes of the higher education people. We're not trying to prepare teachers. What we're doing is taking people once they're out in the field, you know, where people often sense a need and they say, oh gosh, I wish I'd known something back then. I wish I'd done something that I didn't do, you know, because I don't feel as prepared as I need to be. You know, so we're a continuing education function. And I think, you know, in that sense, I think it's always good to have as many groups as we can get involved in things, but at some point you need to actually get the things done, and right now they're not getting done.
So this is not about teacher preparation?
No, it's once teachers are out in the field, you know, how we take people who are out there teaching. They may have been out there for a week, they may have been out there for 25 years, and they say, I need to know something, or here are some exciting things that are going on. I need to know more about these. Whatever it is, and we're going to try to find out what they need and do what they need in them.
Okay. Well, I actually have lots of questions, but there's no time to pursue them, and I'll just leave it here.
Thank you, Mr. Sherman. I agreed, you know, to have my input on this bill because I spotted several years ago something that really began to bother me, and that was children coming out of our school system. We had really no concept about how this economic system works. We wondered what had happened from the time we were in school until today. How was that the case? I had someone in my office about an hour and a half ago, and we were talking about an effort in a community college, you know, down on the coast, Oregon Coast Community College, reaching out to brand new entrepreneurs, trying to get them established. And one of the things that this person pointed out to me is a lot of these people have absolutely no foundation. They don't have the faintest idea how to prepare a budget, how to approach a bank for credit. you know, how to structure the business. They may have a great opportunity or you know, a background or a saleable trade, but they don't actually have to know how to enter into business. And I noticed that on first page you said Oregon Council of Economic Education has been organized, has been attempting to accomplish this, but it's basically not been able to meet the mission, it sounds like, because of funding problems.
Partly.
Okay. It does look to me like somehow we need to work that back in. What do we know between the two of you? What is happening to make sure the teachers have an understanding of themselves, a foundation? When I talk to teachers, I can see why the children have a problem, because a lot of them, they don't understand.
Yeah, I think that's the key thing is that, you know, somewhere along the way, of course, right now, when it comes to business ed, again, we're not, teacher education and business education no longer exists in the public universities in Oregon. You know, Oregon State University eliminated its program, well, I think 1992 was the last of it. There's some small things going on, maybe in Eastern Oregon, but other than that, most of what's going on is going on in some of the private colleges in the state. But what we're seeing is the teachers who are coming out right now, for whatever reason, aren't well prepared. And that's been a real concern with Oregon business and management educators, that, you know, we keep seeing people who have been through the teacher training program such as they are, and they don't have the rigor of the ones that we went through, you know, certainly when I was doing it, and they just feel lost. And it's very difficult for them to get in and develop programs that are going to meet students' needs when they don't feel comfortable with the subject themselves.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, real quickly, Senator Duncan has mentioned several times his concern about this issue and the fact that we've kind of backed away from developing the teacher's capacity to teach the teacher. And one of the things that I spotted as I began to talk to you and think about my own personal experience with this is that we've just apparently just left a lot of things that we expect the teachers to know are not being taught to the teachers, so obviously they don't teach the children.
Right. May I, Mr. Chair? Senator George. One of the problems we're finding is that as teachers are retiring, and given the level of standards in the SIMS right now, the economics has kind of been folded into the social studies, and financial literacy has been folded in. With schools, K through 12, being rather strapped, where do they give? So that they've been, once the people teaching economics have retired, they've not been replaced. So you're finding teachers that are needing to integrate economics into their courses, history, for example, don't have a background in economics. So the Oregon Council of Economic Education tries to contact these people as much as possible. We've provided actually these CDs that show how the economy works, and that's been very popular. But still, you need a human connection to help train these teachers to get them through the courses. And we're also very dedicated to revisiting the SIMS and trying to institute a stronger standard for economic and financial literacy.
Chair, I know you're moving on. I just want to make a quick comment that there was a specialist in the area of personal finance, Marion Kinzel of the Department of Education, and who, by the way, did pass away. And there's no replacement. And then that whole graduation requirement, there was a graduation requirement for personal finance. That is, I believe that is eliminated as of now.
Thank you, Mike.
And that's made a great difference.
All right, we must move on. Thank you, gentlemen. I will
close
the public hearing on Senate Bill 998 and open the public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 428. Senator Courtney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, some days, anyway, this is where we're at. This little bill, which was the bill introduced by AOI, which would allow, as you know, students to go on and get credit at community colleges and high education institutions, that the money from the school district would follow them, is at this state, I believe, in this committee. There are four votes in this committee to vote to the floor, but one of them is a courtesy vote. There are organizations that feel very strongly that the bill needs to be worked. OSBA, COSA, OEA, mentioned a few. They have approached the chair and to me about putting together a work group. Now, AOI doesn't favor this, at least they didn't until 2 hours ago, as I found out, because I've been running out of the hallway and taking, I feel like I'm a boxer. And this is where we're at. I'm going to recommend that a work group be put together of OSDA, COSA, OEA, Higher Ed, AOI, OCCA. I'd say OSEA, except I think they still want to be on, even though they're really mad at me. And, for example, let me just tell you where we're at. I have a list here of amendments that have been offered by OSDA and COSA and OEA. I showed this list to AOI out of the hallway. It's just the six major points. Without making commitments, AOI looked at them and wasn't that bad on at least five of them. There's one that we need to discuss, the work. But if you do this work group, what will happen, I think, is I will come back and say, all right, here is an amendment that all the players are on board on. And I'll make a motion on that amendment. Here is an amendment that we couldn't get together on, and I may or may not make a motion on it. And if I make it and it fails. Then make a motion on the bill to see where the committee is, whether you like it or not. And some of you may move far enough and say that you can support it. At this time, if you want the option to change your mind on the floor. What I'm trying to tell you here is that there's a dynamic swirling around this bill right now that probably we need a work group on. We do need a work group on. People have different emotions in terms of some of the players. Some of the players, no, you move the bill now. Some of the players, you never move the bill because we want to know how much money is going to go into grades K through 12. In other words, they're really concerned about the budget of K through 12. And that may, you know, and what am I going to say about that? You know, I mean, I'll tell you how much money I think. I'll tell you, I'll increase your taxes. You Republicans, I'll tell you that. But I got this thing here. So I'm not trying to confuse you. I'm busting my butt, running back and forth and talking to players. Here's the golden list. There seems to be some movement. I don't know where any of you end up. I know the three that are against. I know who the courtesy vote is. I know the three that are saying that they'll put it out there. But I also know if this thing goes out of here the way it is now, in my humble opinion, 4-3, one courtesy vote, got a feeling gets interesting on the Senate floor. And we had a very interesting today on the Senate floor, so maybe we can have an interesting every day if we keep doing that. So,
okay, I got a picture. I have points. What do you think is important to do?
I can do a work group. The bill will come back. There will be work. There will be votes taken on, because I think I need to make those statements.
Yes.
And deal in good faith. I hope we can bring back a product that the players can get together on.
So ordered. Is there any other business come before this education committee? We are adjourned.